as the cars roar into Pennsylvania, the cradle of liberty, it seems apparent that our citizens are staying off the streets, which may make scoring particularly difficult, even with this year's rule changes. To recap those revisions, women are still worth 10 points more than men in all age brackets, but teenagers now rack up 40 points, and toddlers under 12 now rate a big 70 points. The big score, anyone, any sex, over 75 years old, has been upped to 100 points. As always, how fast you move determines how long you live.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast, where we're off to the races as we talk about Death Race with Sam Stepanenko.
Hello, hello, hello. I am behind the wheel.
We're going to call him the Snake today.
Ooh.
Yes, because everybody's got to have a weird nickname for this today, right?
Yes. Yes.
And Trish Coughlin, what do you want to be?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
I don't have a nickname for you.
No. Well, the Wolf. Let's do that.
The Wolf. Okay, so we have the Snake and the Wolf and the Omega. Jeff.
That sounds all right.
The Call Omega. Me Speed Racer. First name Speed. Last name Racer. I drive the Mach 5.
Wrong movie.
Oh, wait. Can I make a small change? I want to be the shark because I want my car to have like a big blade of a shark fin on the top.
Oh, yes, because all the cars have to look like animals.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or represent the nickname.
Or represent the nickname.
Absolutely.
Okay, wait, whoa. Let's back that one up then. So how does Frankenstein's alligator...
Because it's the monster.
It's just a monster. Okay. Because it's an alligator.
Yeah, it is an alligator.
Which aren't monsters. It's an alligator.
It's green.
We know what
it's
it is.
It's a green thing.
Yes. But it is Roger Corman, and nothing has to make sense in a Roger Corman film. Let's face it.
Yeah. Well, her tulip helmet also doesn't make much sense.
Not a lot in this movie makes sense. All right. Well, we're going to be talking about Roger Corman's Death Race from 1975. And this was kind of a shot pretty quick to capitalize on another kind of post-apocalyptic sports movie, which we've also covered, which was...
Rollerball.
So go check out that episode. I don't have an episode number for you, but you'll find it. It's in there. It's out there. You can watch it and then listen to us. But
over and over and over again, 250 different episodes.
Wow. Thank you for that ad spot.
I thought that went really well.
It did go really well. Well done. So Roger Corman's Death Race from 1975, and we'll be talking about the loose remake by Paul W.S. Anderson, who took almost 13 years to get this thing off the ground, but he finally got it done in 2008. They're different movies, and both have sequels. Like the Death Race 2000 spawned a fairly recent Roger Corman kind of sequel slash remake of Death Race 2050, and there are three sequels to the remake. A lot, considering the remake was not exactly financially a hit by any means.
I think all the other ones were completely straight to video.
Yeah. I think it was just modest enough, and Paul Anderson did remain producer on the rest of them.
I know that the final one has Danny Glover in it, so I kind of want to check that out.
I always get a decent lead, or at least decent backups. I don't know. They had somebody, I can't remember who.
I think Danny Trejo's in all of them, other than the first one.
I think he's actually in the third one. I don't remember seeing him in the credits of the other ones, but I've only ever seen the first one. I might watch more because I did enjoy the movie. I think I actually enjoyed it the second time a little more than the first time I'd seen it years ago.
Nice.
I did not remember much of this particular one, the original. I think I had seen it when I was really young. I didn't remember it, obviously. It was a lot of fun kind of watching the silliness all over again. With the Roger Corman Death Race, it is a very popular sport throughout the country. Why it's going on, I don't know. I guess it just, that's the way it is. It's a corrupt government, and the president, you know, when I was watching this, I couldn't help both movies. I couldn't help but thinking about what was going on in the world right now, and how mm-hmm. how timely both of these movies actually were to do in this episode. So,
yeah, absolutely.
It was a bizarre synchronicity, because I just thought Death Race was going to be fun and light discussion. I'm like, well, maybe not.
No, especially
the sequel or the remake.
I found the original to be quite political. If you're really paying attention, even though it's kind of silly and goofy, there's the absentee president who doesn't even live in the country,
which would translate to a president that goes golfing all the fucking time.
Yes,
yeah. In the 2050 sequel, Washington D.C. is in Dubai.
Oh my god!
But they've renamed all of the cities and countries, and everything's different because the United States is actually the United Corporations of America.
Oh, well, that is actually pretty accurate.
Yeah, it is. That political satire definitely is in the 70s one as well, and it still rings true today.
It does. And there's interesting how you have that the social movement trying to stop the death race, which mm-hmm. is also very, very timely, considering we do have people actively protesting the things that are happening in the world, not just in America, but worldwide, and regarding the way people are treating and the way we're behaving. So again, that's also really kind of telling that things haven't changed very much.
No, and in a very sad, sad concept of this whole thing is you have people mowing down protesters with their cars. So Death Race 2000 takes on a very interesting mm-hmm. dimension.
Well, in the 2050 sequel, they don't say it in the original, but it is a form of population control because the planet is overpopulated. Yeah. So they use it as a form of population control. That's what the point
system
is.
Unless you're rich, of course.
Yes. Well, that goes without saying. But the wonderful thing about that movie is everybody's game. And so when somebody takes somebody out that you wouldn't think would be worth points, the 2050 one, there's one girl, she takes out an entire audience watching the race, like a section, and she's left something under the seats like a Oprah style. And they all like losing their shit trying to find it. And then the guy finds it, opens it up. And of course the whole tier blows up. And so she starts a race off with a big lead.
Nice.
No, I want to see it just for that.
It's silly fun. It is not very good, but Manel Bennett, the guy who played Deathstroke in Arrow, is Frankenstein in that one.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Brings up an interesting concept too, is the character as legend.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I mean, Frankenstein as legend, and if you haven't seen it, there's going to be spoilers all over the place in this because there's spoilers in both of them. Is Frankenstein sort of established as this monstrous, badly damaged human being? When he is damaged, both emotionally and physically, but he's nowhere near as badly damaged as they make him out to be at the beginning.
They also mention that he's not the first Frankenstein.
That
does play in both movies.
It does, yeah. And I love the fact that they use Carradine for the voice of Frankenstein in the remake. I think that was really a nice touch.
Mm-hmm. It sounded way cooler.
Yeah, he did.
It's weird. With these movies, I kept thinking, like, The Running Man, where you could use people, like, mm-hmm. they said, oh, these guys won, but they were all dead. And then this also made me think of The Hunger Games, because I'm like, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. they've now got youth novels that are basically Death Race 2000.
Yeah, what were you saying there, Jeff?
Oh, well, one thing I was just thinking with really, really quickly in my own headcanon, I was trying to put together how the Death Race takes place in the year 2012. And obviously, Death Race 2000 is in the year 2000. So in my mind, there's this thing where at the end of Death Race 2000, he becomes President Frankenstein. But then, something happens and he falls out of favor with the people and goes to prison. And this is like, if he gets out, he can be president again, but he dies. And so it's like a bit more political than this like fantasy angle. I thought was fun on the whole
movie. Yeah, my head was going the same way, actually.
Well, when they watch the 2050 one, they don't even mention the president angle, so that kind of went away. There was a comic book several years ago by Pat Mills and Kevin O'Neill, like the martial law team.
Wow.
I wish I had more of them, because I think I only wound up getting about 3 of the 8 issues, so I'd love to track down the rest of them. But I loved it. It was very post-apocalyptic, given it this that team. Like, it was the most wild rendition of this idea that I'd seen pen to paper. That's the version I'd like to see. It'd be very Mad Max type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, no,
which I think was the same year.
Yeah, I want our martial law movie, Jay. I want it so bad. For miniseries, actually. I want it to be like a Netflix or a Prime series.
Ah, oh, they need to spend some money, yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe that would be the death knell of the superhero genre in film. Because that's what martial law does.
It really does, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Still love that book. But, yeah, I was going to mention something before we got sidetracked there about the whole concept of murder as entertainment being sort of a very common trope, particularly in film, but also in novels. Like, I mean, there's a series of novels. It starts with a book called The Tenth Victim about sort of like filmed murder where the people are actively being watched as they're hunting down people to murder them. And this goes back, well, obviously as far as the 70s and probably further still, as far as just sort of that whole idea of how morbid we are as a species, where the thought of watching somebody else die is entertaining to us. Maybe not all of us, but to a surprisingly large portion of the population.
I mean, well, in a fictional sense, yeah, I love me a horror movie and this type of thing. But in reality, like, if somebody posts a real life murder on social media, I click away and then I block the dude who posted it, because I'm like, why are you posting that on my timeline? I don't want to see that.
You're a sick fucker. I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it goes way, way back farther. Like, I mean, the whole concept of like the gladiators.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not a new concept. It's just a variation of that concept.
One thing that was kind of interesting is I read the short story last night that it was based on called The Racer by Abe Melchior. And it was all right. It was first published in a men's magazine like Stag or something in the 50s. And Roger Corman must have been reading that magazine and had it in mind a bunch of years down the road. But the one thing that was interesting about it is in the evolution of how the race got started, they were talking about how people would watch regular races, like back in like the 1950s or something. Mm-hmm. But what people were really there was to watch the crashes. Yes. And then because what they liked to see was the crashes, they would engineer more situations where there might be more what in the story they call tragi-acts, which is a tragic accident.
Oh.
But then, so that kind of evolves with this cross-country race where the winner gets $100,000. But the dude, he like goes through this small town to try to mow down people for points. And some person calls him a butcher. And then he just sees that person everywhere, gets under his skin, and he can't do the death race anymore. And, you know, that's basically the story. So they built on it a lot in the Roger Corman one. They added like a whole satire thing in there, which was really, really great, I think. Added to the story a lot.
And I have to add here, is like, wow, so like at a certain point in time, there really was legitimate reason to have those magazines, quote unquote, for the articles.
Yeah.
Because that sounds great to read about, but a lot of people probably wouldn't have known about it.
There are a lot of writers who were published early in their careers in magazines like Playboy and Stag and Penthouse. Right. Because they were trying to be an all-round men's magazine. It was titillating, but it wasn't supposed to be just about the boobs.
No. Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was young, the first time I grabbed a Playboy, then you flip through it for the boobs, and then you actually start reading the articles, and you're realizing, oh, the articles are really good.
Yeah, and like lots of just incredible short fiction, like Roald Dahl and like Kirk Vonnegut, and just a ton of people, like Harlan Ellison, like, you know, a whole bunch of people wrote short stories. And also Harvey Kurtzman had comics in Playboy.
Nice.
Yeah, no, lots of big names worked for Playboy. And to find the source material for Death Race, that's a great place to start. Because it is exploitive. And let's go to the trailer right now for Death Race 2000 from 1975.
The year 2000. America is a vast speedway. People line the streets to witness the greatest drivers on earth in a race from sea to shining sea.
This is a death race.
You finish first, or not at all. Death Race 2000. Every car a deadly weapon. Every spectator a potential point. Cross-country road wreck, and the traffic is murder.
Who are you anyway?
Frankenstein. National hero. Best driver on earth.
I don't want you to die.
He was built by the world's finest surgeons to drive the fastest car ever designed, and nothing can stop him now. Death Race 2000, rated R.
All right, that was the trailer for Death Race 1975, produced by Roger Corman, based on the screenplay by Robert Thom and Charles B. Griffith, of course, based on the story by Ib Melkor the Racer. Robert Thorne wrote something called All the Fine Young Cannibals, which sounds really good for our let's make up something for this title idea.
Yeah.
Is that where the band name Fine Young Cannibals came
from? I have a feeling it does. Charles B. Griffith has graced our shores of Invasion of the Remake many times as a writer for things we've talked about. First time we talked about was episode 55.
My least favorite movie ever, Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, yeah.
Which one?
The musical remake. The first one was fun.
There you go.
Yes.
Lots of people love that movie, but that I find none of us are among them. The next time we talked about Charles B. Griffith was in episode 106, one of my favorites.
Oh, I missed that one.
That was Barbarella.
I love Barbarella.
Yeah, and then, of course, another Roger Corman that we remade, episode 140.
Eat My Dust.
Yes.
Another car movie from Roger Corman, no less.
Yeah.
He did do quite a few race movies. This is directed by actor Paul Bartel, more known for his acting stuff, and he was actually in Eat My Dust as an actor.
Yes.
We've also talked about him a couple other times outside of Eat My Dust. The next time would have been episode 148.
Piranha.
And again in 212.
Chopping Mall.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of chopping in that, but it was fun.
No.
There was at least a mall.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I didn't realize that he was a director. He directed the very first movie I ever saw on the first VCR we ever owned when I was a kid. He directed and starred in Eating Raoul.
Nice.
Which is a great movie. At least I remember it being great back then. It's probably not so good now.
A fun fact about Raoul, tastes like chicken.
Shouldn't he taste like pork? I thought that's what humans are supposed to taste like.
I just was like, that's the Matrix thing. Everything tastes like chicken, right?
Oh. Well, then where did they get the idea for pork?
I don't know.
Well, that's the way they called cannibalism eating the long pig, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess we probably do taste like pork. Somebody had to find out.
I mean, I do know, there's people who have written about eating people, and apparently it is similar to pork.
All right.
Good to know.
You can just look it up.
Yeah.
Please do.
Yeah, just look it up. don't write about it. In fact, maybe clear your search history after you look it up.
Don't do a deep dive.
Don't
get in there.
No. Yeah. Just maybe watch a cannibal movie and call it a day.
Yeah, speaking of murder is entertainment, right?
Yeah. All right. This movie stars David Carradine, who was fresh off of his Kung Fu series. It just walked and basically took the first feature that was offered to him because he figured his career might suffer if he doesn't jump from television to a feature film right away. And it did work. He wound up starring in lots of B-movies after this. We actually have done David Carradine movie once before, and that was episode 196.
Cue the Winged Serpent.
Absolutely.
He was actually really good in that, even though the movie itself was but his performance was indicative of the talent he actually did have.
I liked how this movie, because he was clearly didn't give a fuck.
No, he was just having fun. Yeah, you could tell he was having fun.
He was having fun.
One thing that was really crazy about, and I think this is in Roger Corman's autobiography that other people also write in, called How I Made 100 Movies in Hollywood and Never Lost a Dime.
Nice.
But there's this story about how the whole time that they were shooting Death Race 2000, David Carradine would go off and, between takes, and he would roll up something in a cigarette, and then he would smoke it and he would offer it to the various crew members. and they'd be like, hey man, like, it's, you know, cool, but we're making a movie, like, we just want to get it done, like, you know, we're good. And so he's just smoking this the entire time, and then at the, when they finish making the movie, they're having a little wrap party, and he's like, hey, and you finally want to try this this thing, and they're like, oh yeah. And yeah, one of them woke up 4 days later in another state, and the other person, you know, woke up like in his old house and didn't know how he got there, and just like all of this weird stuff. But he had, David Carradine had been smoking it the entire time they were making this movie.
Oh my god,
that does explain a lot.
What explains was an it?
Awful lot.
And nobody knows.
I'm betting it's like a mixture of like some wild ass shit, like heroin and PCP and marijuana.
Or it was just tobacco and everybody was tripping off of it because they thought it was something else.
Yeah, that's what Amelia said.
Placebo effect, right?
The placebo effect can only go so far, to be honest. 4 days later, no.
Or it's just exaggerated to build the legend of David Carradine.
Most likely.
It's true.
All right. Well, we've got a lot of other actors to go through here. The next star of this movie might be familiar to our listeners. I think something's going to happen with this guy. He had something. Sylvester Stallone as Machine Gun Joe Viterbo. We've actually talked about him a couple of times. Episode 26 was the first go-round for Sly.
Something I wasn't here for, and I'm glad I wasn't. Oscar.
It was really fun. I used to love Oscar, and then I saw the French one, and now I think the Sylvester one's a piece of shit. Because the French one's like so unrelentingly funny, and then you're just exhausted by the end of it. And then you go watch the Stallone one, and you're like, I'm wasted. I'm wasted. I can't do it anymore.
Well, the Stallone one, it's so funny. When I remembered it first, it was like this way over the top movie. Mm-hmm. And then I watched the French one and I'm like, oh no, these are all
very subdued
performance.
And hey, he played an Italian mobster there too, which was his gimmick in this movie.
Yeah.
And that is, there's a lot of stereotypes for the drivers because they're cartoon characters, much like the wrestlers in the 70s and 80s where they were just weird cartoon characters. Simone Griffith was Annie Smith, and I just wanted to write it down because I thought this was an amazing title. She was in a movie called 10 Rules for Sleeping Around.
That's pretty. That's another one we could...
Oh, yeah.
He only has 10.
Jay?
Yes?
Did we mention Cliffhanger?
Oh, yeah, no, episode 147. I wrote it down. I just we skipped by it because we were talking about Oscar. Engaged. But we also remade Cliffhanger in episode 147 with Sly.
I just want to make sure I didn't miss it because I wasn't paying attention or something.
No, yeah, I got sidetracked because we talk about things.
That's what we do.
Yeah, it's a podcast. Ah, the lovely Mary Warrenoff was Calamity Jane, and this is pre-episode 48. Which was,
I missed that one.
Oh, that was Last Starfighter. And she was in that. And then we talked about her more recently in episode 227, where I really fell in love with her.
Night of the Comet.
And
she was also in Shopping Mall at the beginning with Paul Bartel.
Yes. Oh, that's right.
And I really enjoyed her in this movie because I've kind of gotten to know her as sort of this severe-looking woman. Mm-hmm. And she was really quite... soft in this movie, like in terms of her look and her hair was down, and I'm like, wow, she was really a very nice looking woman, and I don't know what happened to make her look so, where she kind of got typecast as a severe looking woman.
I don't know.
The hair.
Yeah, I thought
the hair can do all of it. Yeah. And then what you do is, okay, A, it's hair, and B, it's probably them telling her, you look too chubby, you need to lose weight. And then it just really angled her features.
Yeah, and I mean, in Raoul, which she's also in, she was, again, kind of that softer looking, but her character was so severe in terms of characterization. I think that may be where it kind of sort of started to develop. But in Rock and Roll High School, she's really severe. In Night of the Comet, she's really... stern and severe as well. So
I think she's very cute in that movie.
Yeah, and so I was a little disappointed to find that she had become typecast after this movie.
I have a more pressing question. She was eating Raoul. What part did she eat?
I think they ate all of them, but there was some
spleen.
She was the Spleen Girl.
Funniest part.
All right. Well, Roberta Collins was in here as Matilda the Hun, and she's most famous for these women in prison grindhouse movies, Caged Heat being one of the more famous ones. But you look at her acting resume, and it's just lots of women in prison movies. Martin Cove was Nero the Hero, and Trish will most know him from the Karate Kid movies and that new series that's on YouTube.
Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai. So, yeah, he's in Cobra Kai and the Karate Kid movies. Louisa Moritz was Mira, and this was in episode 54, the episode Sam's never going to get live down for recommending.
And I don't want to, because you finally saw one of the most amazing films out there.
Yes, and even though we failed to remake it in any plausible way, she was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and that was an amazing movie to watch, and we had a lot of fun at least talking about it, and I had a lot of fun making a much more terrible movie out of it.
That's the only way you could go.
That's right.
Yeah, this is one of those moments of film perfection that's... Yeah. You never should have touched or tried to touch, but I don't know if you ever would have seen it if we hadn't done it.
That's true. It might have been a while, because we have a career of watching shittier movies now.
Yeah.
Don Steele was Junior Bruce, and most famous for being in the Gremlins movies. Episode 233, Joyce Jamison, who plays Grace Pander, she was in that, and that was just a few weeks ago, about a month ago now. Well, maybe a month and a half, and that was...
Oh, I didn't go back that far.
Oh, okay. Well, that was Every Which Way But Loose, episode 233. And Harriet Medine was Thomasina Payne. There's a nice blink and you'll miss it cameo of John Landis, who plays a mechanic in this movie as well.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
He's been making a lot of cameo, because he cameoed in one of those Stephen King movies I watched, too.
Mm-hmm.
Sleepwalkers, right?
Yeah.
The Stand.
The Stand. Oh, yeah. He would have been in The Stand. Yeah. That was the Mick Garris one, yeah. He tends to be in Mick Garris movies. They tend to cameo in each other's things a lot.
Because it's fun.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a good cameo. All right, real simple plot with this one. You've got a race, cross-country race. You get points for hitting people. In fact, I have got the breakdown here. Actually, you heard it at the beginning. But 10 points for women. And I know Trish is going to get on. I'm like, we should be worth more, but teenagers are worth 40. They do say they're worth more than just men. So they did say that in the movie. They don't tell me how much men are, so I'm guessing they're 5. But women are 10, teens are 40, toddlers, disgustingly, are 70, and seniors are a whopping 100 points.
Woo.
And it just happened to be Euthanasia Day during the race.
That was so funny. Yeah. That was one of the moments that made me laugh out loud. And it's funny, because I have seen this movie before, and I know I've seen it before a couple times, but I've said this before. Sometimes when you go and watch, when you watch something when you're like 18 or 19 years old or 20 years old, a lot of the satire doesn't quite hit the way it does as you get older.
Yeah.
Because you're less jaded, or because you just have a smaller view of the world. Because I found that I enjoyed it a lot more this time than the previous watches. And I didn't remember as much as I thought I did either.
Same here, actually.
You haven't seen as much when you're young.
Yeah, I had been forever since I'd seen it, because I don't think I ever watched it more than the one time. So I didn't really remember anything about it. But that scene in particular is a really good one, because they've lined up all of these seniors out in the street, and then Frankenstein veers off to mow down all the nurses and doctors who put them out there. So it gives us a real great look at the type of person that Frankenstein actually is. Whereas... somebody like Joe Viterbo would have gone after anything in front of him.
He even kills his own pit crew at one point.
Yep.
But
which
is
a running joke in the remake.
Yes, it is. Which is kind of funny. Yeah. But in a way, this kind of foreshadows the pseudo twist at the end, that he doesn't take the obvious kills, that he's going after people who are kind of propagating this sanctioned murder.
Yeah, he's maybe participating in it, but he clearly doesn't agree with it. And this is just how he makes his living, and his body has suffered for it.
Well, and that's what I would say. Like, this is what I never really got about The Purge, is because The Purge movies, they just go after anybody who's pissed you off. And I'm like, that's small-minded. There's bigger potatoes. There's bigger fish to fry. Go after the big assholes.
Yeah.
It's the Purge.
Yeah, this is the Purge, but somebody's making money off of it now. And you think about it, yeah. It's like NASCAR with dead bodies, that gladiatorial aspect that's primal in us, and then you mix it with the most famous U.S. sport of NASCAR, and you got something. And this movie spawned countless violent video games. One was the 1979, I think, which was Death Race, and it was a very controversial one. First video game to actually get a public outcry for the violence, because you're mowing down people and getting points for it.
Yeah. And did they have babies in it?
I don't know. That one's a little too early for me, but I do remember like a more recent ones like Carmageddon and... what's that other one I like to play with? Sweet Tooth. That one's really good too. PlayStation. Oh,
Twisted Metal.
Twisted Metal. Huh? I like Twisted Metal.
You know, that was one thing I was thinking while I was watching particularly the remake, is how is it possible that Death Race 2000 or Death Race the Remake has not been licensed for a video game yet? Because you're right, it has spawned a lot of imitators.
Yeah, well, there are two Death Race video games, but I don't think either were licensed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if they did a fully licensed game, I think they, you know, would just be violent Mario Kart.
Well, that's hilarious because especially when I was watching the remake, I actually wrote down Mario Kart in my margins because they're running over these magic spots, lack of a better term, which would activate their weapons in their car to be able to use the front or the rear ones or these shield blockers, these big blockers that come out of the street so that the guy behind you might run into. So there's these weird trigger spots that you would have in a video game, and you can't help but think that Paul Anderson probably was playing Mario Kart and put that shit in his movie. And it's brilliant. Yeah. It was actually a really good idea. It just added a little extra nonsense to the whole thing, which, considering how more serious that minded that movie is, there's a subversive humor to it as well.
You know, one thing I was thinking, though, while I was watching it, is that one thing that I think would have sold this movie so much better is if it had a more Paul Verhoeven-esque universe building aspect to it.
Oh, like, man, can you imagine?
Or Total Recall, and you would just have a look at the society of this absurd world that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
That
would have
just sold everything.
He would have been the perfect director for the remake of this.
Totally.
Yeah.
I was wishing that it was a Paul Verhoeven movie as I was watching it.
Yeah. We obviously were all in similar mindsets, because I was thinking the exact same thing on that as well. My God, I wish Paul Verhoeven had done something with this.
Yeah.
Everybody's got like a navigator. The drivers have navigators to help them move along cross country. And the one that's riding with Frankenstein is part of this resistance movement and has been sabotaging him along the way and leading him into traps, because the resistance thinks he's friends with the president. And the president's running around saying, oh, yeah, we're buddy buddy. Clearly, Frankenstein doesn't think much of this guy. So it's another president that spouts a lot of shit that's not true.
Yeah.
That's not identifiable at all.
No. No, he's the bestest friends with Frankenstein. There's no better of friends. And they could be like, they friend a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. That movie, I was rolling with the humor right away until his glove came off and he literally had a hand grenade. Like, his hand was a grenade.
And I love that. I mean, sure, it was pokey and it was a bad visual pun, but it was fun.
I do like it when she just yanks it off and throws it into Joe's car.
Yeah.
So fun.
Yeah, and I like the way they kept the aspect of her kind of betraying him throughout the whole race. In the remake, there was different circumstances, but a similar theme where she's quietly subverting his success under the direction of, in this case, the prison director.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept some key elements of the original, but still made something still that was unique in it and entertaining. I don't know if it's good per se, but it's entertaining.
Yeah, it's fine. Like you'll probably be entertained watching that remake. You might have been disappointed if you paid $20 for it to go to the theater to see it, but it's entertaining for a once around. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I had fun. It was better than I thought it would be.
I, you know, as much as I love Jason Statham, he's in a lot of kind of mediocre movies like this, you know?
Yeah, because he just says yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was reading that, so the Death Race was part of this thing where the same weekend in August, every single year for 5 years, there was a Jason Statham movie that came out.
That's
which
true.
Is crazy.
I'm trying to remember them all, but I think The Mechanic and War were among them, as well as Death Race.
Transporter 2, I think.
Yeah, one of the Transporter movies, and maybe, I'm not sure, I don't think it was Crank. I can't remember what the other one was, but yeah, it was a neat little fact where he had this the same week of August that was his. It was Jason Statham week. It's kind of like that first week in May that's usually for Marvel movies.
It makes me think that, like, I think in some aspects Jason Statham is redoing the Michael Caine method of doing movies, which is, I'll make it for the money and then I'll buy something nice.
It's probably true. Like, he would be one of these, like, action movie stars that was kind of like, okay, well, if Sylvester Stallone and Schwarzenegger were on top, he's somewhere in between, like, Van Damme and those other guys.
He was like the everyman version of an action hero, but like, not in a John McClane way where you can't buy it. It was kind of like, he is talented and he is skilled, but still, you know, he's kind of like me.
Well.
The Mr. Blue Collar American watching the Jason Statham.
Yeah, I don't know. He's kind of every man, but then you see him without a shirt and he's not every man.
I was going to set you up for that, but there you go. Before he started that movie, he was at 20% body fat. And by the time he started shooting it, he was at 6.
Wow.
Oh.
Like, he was cut. And they took every opportunity to show it to you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the dude has been an athlete his whole life. Like, he used to be an Olympic diver. Like, he was on the British Olympic team.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah. He was a high diver, yeah. And I mean, and he is a skilled martial artist. A lot of the martial arts he does in his movies are because he knows how to do it.
Yeah.
And he's probably just gotten better. He's probably continuing to learn as he takes on these roles.
Yeah. And you know what? He's one thing I found out, like, in the movie Spy, where he plays, like, the cohort of Melissa McCarthy, he's funny. If you get him to just do some straight, like, I'm a hard man type of shit, he's hilarious.
Oh, but you get both those versions in Guy Ritchie movies. So, he clearly had the acting chops even then.
But then with you say that Jason Statham weekend kept being like, you know, hard man movies and no comedy. Mm-hmm. He should have more comedy.
He is quite good at comedy. And I think that's a wasted skill set for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the way they about face his character in Hobbs and Shaw and show that he can do mean but funny.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I want to talk about favorite kills in this movie. Because mine was the construction workers who go down the manhole and leave the last guy standing. So he gets mowed down and he's bleeding from his crotch. So you know where he got hit. And then the guys poke up and then they drive over the manhole cover, still squishing the other two.
Yeah.
Their hands explode.
Yeah.
I think my favorite.
That was very trauma-esque.
That was very trauma-esque, yeah. I like the one where the guys are working on the power pole.
Yeah.
And one guy's holding the ladder. And I like the comedy of that one where he's like, oh, no, you take him. Go ahead. Like, I found that pretty entertaining.
That's cool. Yeah, it's very vaudevillian, that one.
Nice.
What about you, Trish?
Okay, I don't remember who it was, but I think it's the start of the second day, and they're starting their race again. And there's that guy in the robes who goes out onto the track. And, like, they just do another loop to get him. Because I'm like, well, he's participating, so fuck this guy. And he does.
Yeah, to take out one of the officials.
And he does.
Yeah.
What about you, Jeff?
You know, I still think the first time I saw it, it was my favorite. And I still think it is now. It is when they wheel out all of the old people onto the street. And then he just takes the side ramp and takes out all the nurses.
that one is great.
That's my second favorite.
Really good. But, this time watching it, I didn't remember the one with the manhole cover. That's the one that made me laugh the most, definitely.
Nice. So I have a big question for you. What the hell do the French do? to piss off the United States so much.
Just be French. You apparently don't have to do much to do that.
that was the fall guy for the president when these kills that were happening because of the resistance. Well, they didn't want the citizens to know about it, so they did initiate this cover up, blaming the French for it. These drones would come in, and it was the French Air Force.
Well, I was reading, and apparently, in the mid to late 70s. Or maybe in early 70s, there was sort of this American anti-sentiment towards France.
Mm-hmm.
And Corman was playing up on that.
Okay, so it's something that is dated from its time and doesn't age well, because I didn't know what the hell that was about.
Yeah, and I didn't really either. Like I said, if I hadn't read something about it, I don't think I would have got the joke.
But there's sort of this whole French thing, like, I mean, since the U.S., like, since the World War II, the U.S., mostly goes around, if it weren't for us, you'd be speaking German right now to a lot of people.
Well, and it's post-Vietnam as well. And don't forget, the French were there first, and they backed out, leaving the Americans to try and clean up the mess, which they didn't do successfully, obviously. But I think that's might be part of that anti-sentiment as well, is well, you fucking French, you left us to deal with it by ourselves, and look what happened.
The timeline matches up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I can't verify that, so please don't quote me on it, but it does make sense.
Okay, well, let's move on to Death Race from 2008. Let's hit the trailer, and we'll be right back to talk more Death Race.
I created Death Race 6 years ago. I now have as many viewers as the Super Bowl. The drivers are convicts, and the rules are simple. There are no rules. Win and get your freedom. Or die trying.
Who's the new guy?
Jensen Ames.
He used to race for NASCAR.
They say he killed his wife.
I guess he didn't like the old Miguel.
I want you to drive for me.
Unless you think I'm risking my life doing this for you.
I'm offering you your freedom. All you have to do is walk off that track alive and win, of course.
The race takes place in 3 stages over 3 days. Tomorrow you meet your navigator.
They get bussed in from the women's facility.
So what about the other drivers?
It's kill. It'll be kill. I'm gonna win this race because I want out of here. Time to meet the monster. Mustang V8 Fastback. 3/4-inch steel plate for defense. Smoke, oil, and napalm. And 30mm machine guns for offense.
It's on.
Now that's entertainment.
You're all lucky a driver like me just happened to turn up in your prison.
Oh, I'm more than lucky.
You're out in front. Who are you going to shoot at?
You don't go backwards.
He knows we set him up. What are we
going to
do?
We're going to kill him.
Welcome to the jungle!
What just happened?
Can't kill me. You can burn me, you can shoot me, but you can't kill me!
All right, that was the trailer for Death Race 2008, with the stories and screenplay and director all being Paul W.S. Anderson, most famous for the Resident Evil franchise, and episode 160, where we remade
Event Horizon.
Event Horizon.
Also known as the black hole done properly.
Event Horizon the high point of that man's career. Like, I don't think that he's made anything else that touches Event Horizon.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. Event Horizon is just, there's something about Event Horizon that's pretty cool. But even then, that wasn't a hit. It just wound up being kind of this fun movie that, well, dark movie, but this movie that appeals to both science fiction and horror fans. So it became kind of a cult movie because of it. Because, yeah, I don't remember that movie reviewing very well at the time. But I remember loving it because of it. It was basically Hellraiser in space. But now we know it's Hellraiser in space with Disney's Black Hole. Yeah. You're never going to get that out of your head.
No. You know what? Go watch it and find out what we mean.
Watch them both and then find out what we mean.
Yeah, do a double feature.
Yeah.
Get back to me. All right. Starring Jason Statham as Jensen Ames, who also takes on the Frankenstein persona during this movie as he has been sent to prison for the death of his wife. He's been framed for the death of his wife by another racer. And it's because they needed to replace Frankenstein, who was their biggest draw to this death race. And their ratings are down, which means the money coming in is down. So they needed another racer to come in to take the place, a very skilled racer. And this is in Jason Statham, his Jensen Ames character, and he was a former NASCAR driver and a rough and tumble dude in his own right, and he gets sent to jail to become the new Frankenstein by Joan Allen, who plays Hennessy. Now, Jason Statham, we have talked about before, I should mention real quick, episode 91, which was
The Italian Job,
and then in 128,
The Mechanic. And in 156,
what was 156?
Longest Yard and Mean Machine.
Oh, I totally forgot about that one. I missed that one.
There we go. So we're even talking, now, Jay.
Yeah, we are. We're back on the scoreboard. Tied. Now, Joan Allen, Trish and I both talked about recently in our Stephen King episode just a couple weeks ago. So, go check out A Good Marriage. But I really liked her in this, like playing a very different type of character, this mean warden who's actually fairly genial to the driver and offering all sorts of stuff. And she uses Statham's freedom as a way to incentivize him to become Frankenstein, because Frankenstein's already won 4 races. If you win 5, you win your freedom. Nobody's done this. There's a reason for it, because they don't want you out there.
Yeah, she stacked the deck.
Yeah. And of course, if Frankenstein wins his freedom, then there's no more Frankenstein on TV. So that's not going to happen if he's the biggest draw. So do the math there. This also stars Tyrese Gibson from the Fast and the Furious movies as the new Machine Gun Joe, replacing Sylvester Stallone in that role. Tyrese and Jason Statham would later meet in a Fast and the Furious movie, so there you go.
Yeah, and Jeff, interestingly enough, asked if we'd covered this movie after we finished recording last week. He asked if we'd covered Flight of the Phoenix, which Tyrese was actually in.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
And so, also, Jay,
what episode number was that?
That was 173.
Yeah, 173.
Yeah. Joan Allen was also another episode of ours.
Really?
Yeah. Episode 99. Manhunter.
What's
Red Dragon. Yeah. She was in Manhunter. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, my God. She is. I forgot.
Wow. I obviously didn't go back far enough.
Yeah, well, she has a pretty big
list. Does. Sometimes when you're scrolling through IMDb, it's easy to pass something by that. And if I don't remember, I don't remember.
And we've done a lot of episodes at this
point.
We
have done a lot of episodes, so this is going to happen more and more often where I forget about it. Ian McShane, one of my favorite people, plays the coach, and you can catch him in a recurring role in the John Wick movies and, of course, on American Gods on Amazon Prime right now. Natalie Martinez was Case. You can catch her on, I think it's a Netflix show called The Island, like I-Land, so go check that out. She just was another hot chick to me, but she looks like a lot of these people. She looks like she should have been in a Transformers movie.
Or a Fast and the Furious movie.
Or a Fast and the Furious movie, yeah. Just big breasts and tight buns. But that's part of the exploitation of that they're keeping with Death Race. And the remake is far less exploitive than the Roger Corman version. So.
Oh, yeah.
One thing that Leo was saying while we were watching it, it's like, you know, I don't know how to feel about before any of the female characters are introduced, we're told explicitly that they're supposed to be objectified. That's kind of weird.
It's true.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
Well, be fair, at this point in time, The Price is Right is huge. And what were the spokesmodels but eye candy next to the prizes?
Yeah. To distract you from making calculations in your head.
Yep.
Max Ryan was Pachenko. He was in actually a werewolf movie that we didn't actually cover in our werewolf special. Oh my God.
Oh my.
I know. It was called Dark Moon Rising. So I don't know. I guess we have more werewolf movies to watch. God damn it.
Yeah. Well, I read about it and it didn't look entertaining enough for me. So like it's really camp. It's a bad movie, but if you're not in the right frame of mind, you won't like it.
Fair enough. Jason Clarke was in a very supportive role of Ulrich. He's gone on to bigger things. He was in Terminator Genisys. I'm going to call it Genisys. Just to make the weird spelling pay off.
Nice.
Frederick Kohler was Lists, and he's actually in all four of the Death Race movies. So he's the only character that reoccurs through all of these films that I'm aware of anyway.
He's one of those actors that I know that face, yeah. Actors, because he's been in so much stuff, but has always been in these smaller supporting roles. And I mean, yeah. I think it's amazing that he's made a career out of it.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys in here that are that guy I saw in that thing that one time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Jacob Vangus was Gunner, who was in the aforementioned episode 173, Flight of the Phoenix. Yeah.
Yeah. I love him. He is so entertaining every time you see him on screen. He's another one of those actors that he's sort of played these supporting roles, but you recognize him right away. It's like, yeah, I know who this guy is, even though I don't remember his name.
Yeah.
It's like
he always plays the same character, but I always love it.
So much fun in Gabriel Iglesias TV series. He plays his best friend. It's a slightly different role for him. I mean, if you're not into sort of sitcoms, it's probably not your thing, but he's fun in it.
He's the dude with all the tattoos, right? Like, that seems odd for a sitcom, but...
Jake Vargas, isn't he the...
Sitcoms have changed.
I thought he was the one with the mohawk.
Oh, maybe he was the one with the mohawk. I'm getting confused with another dude. Justin Mader was Travis Colt. He was in Room... Robert Shaw was 4K. He was in Sky Sharks. That one was for Trish.
Nice.
Sharks that are in the sky.
I haven't seen it yet.
I have not seen it yet either, but it looks fun. But most people will remember him as, I think, Shang Lao from the Mortal Kombat movies. Obviously,
Shang Li,
maybe. Yeah, he was the main Asian character in those movies, so I honestly don't remember. I clearly am not a Mortal Kombat fan. And it's faded too far in my memory. I would have been about 20 years ago when I watched those.
All I remember is the theme song, Mortal Kombat!
Yeah. And David Carradine, of course, was the voice of the first Frankenstein at the beginning of the film when he finishes the race and sacrifices himself and ejects his navigator. Yeah.
I love that foreshadowing.
It is, because I love how they use the same gag on Machine Gun Joe twice, releasing the tombstone, and it doesn't work again, but he's got a whole new trick up his sleeve with this one.
And then with what they did with the Nitro, that was really great, actually. That was probably, yeah, that was cool.
And the turn in character for Machine Gun Joe was very different, too, where they basically are planning a jailbreak. So I'm kind of wondering how the sequels pan out. I'm guessing they just replaced Frankenstein again.
Probably, yeah. Sort of something along those lines.
Yeah.
One thing I really enjoyed about the remake, I mean, on the whole, it doesn't have as much depth, surprisingly enough. It's hard to believe I'm saying that about a Corman film, but it doesn't have as much depth as the Corman film does.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have, like, the political satire, but oddly enough, also winds up ringing fairly true to current events. When you start seeing the police corruption that is happening here. Now, again, this is all the prisons are corporate run, so you can...
Much like they are nowadays.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, at the very beginning, I was like, this title card literally is describing what prisons are like in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't too far off the truth.
Occupied. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's what they do now, is they'll just keep them occupied because they're privately run and they don't make money if they don't have them full.
Yeah.
You can feasibly see this even happening with corporations are running these prisons, and to maybe make it more cost effective to suddenly turn your most violent prisoners into this sport, say they're already on death row, and have them entertain the masses and bringing in millions, if not billions of dollars.
Yeah.
To fund the corporation.
They touch base on that in Orange is the New Black, how they generate new income streams by having them manufacture things and stuff like that. So it's not a far extension to have them become entertainment.
Well, that's basically what the Running Man is.
Mm-hmm.
That's entirely it. It's these criminals, people they've said are criminals, and they put them in there with the gladiators. That's exactly what the Running Man is.
You know, I could see Dana White having a hand in something like that. Mm-hmm. The president of UFC.
Yeah.
No, I mean, this movie does wind up making its nods to the original as well, and we've already mentioned a handful of those, including the glove, where the hand grenade would have been, covering up his hand. It was just part of the iconography of the character, so that was kind of cool. And I loved how Machine Gun Joe nicknamed him Igor as he's working on the car, because he's not supposed to be publicly known as being the new Frankenstein, but it ties rather nicely back to it.
Yeah, it was pretty witty. I have a question for you guys. How did you feel about the whole sort of motivation to get Ames into prison with the murder of his wife and then having the killer be one of the other drivers? Do you feel like that felt a little bit forced?
Well, it's gross, but yeah, it is forced, but it all makes sense within the body of the film. As far as the motivation, I mean, it's a weak motivation to destroy somebody's life because you need to have a talented racer replace Frankenstein.
I guess they needed that. They needed to know that Ames actually was a good guy, that he wasn't a killer or a murderer.
He was just a blue collar guy. You know, he was out there doing the work, coming home to a family,
and then they take it all away. Yeah.
To me, it's lazy because it has been done so much.
It is.
Oh, your wife been raped and killed. Your daughter's been raped and killed. All these people have been raped and killed.
When it came out, like that's the height of when all of those things were becoming super, super saturated in movies. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the ways where it really is of its time.
They're doing it back in the '80s. It's not new.
Yeah, no. This is the women in fridge argument of to create a female character just to die horribly.
Yeah,
that was her function on film, and that sucks to motivate the story and his revenge. Okay, I mean, that's definitely good motivation, but to create a character just to die in that way, and we have no other real sense of who this person would have been. We get more sense of Ames, but I mean, they don't take the time to tell us who she is, and so you consequently don't care as much about it when it happens. And it's a shame that any type of character, female, male, or whatever, would be just created to die. But you only have a certain amount of time to play with as well, so you kind of have to move it along. I get it. It sucks, and I'm not sure what the narrative of how to change that is. But you also look at the films of Paul W.S. Anderson.
There's a lot of ladies.
Here's the thing. The solution is actually fairly easy. You can have him have sort of a past. There is a botched robbery in which somebody gets murdered. Not even anybody we introduce. He could be framed for that. And then as his wife is still alive, his motivation for getting out is even more intense because he wants to get back to her.
Mm.
I would have enjoyed that a lot more.
Yeah, that's the Con Air plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
how awesome is that
there
movie?
Are no new plots. You just have to make them play differently, that's all.
I mean, I like that he's set up, because then you have that nemesis on the track as well.
Yeah.
I mean, not that Machine Gun Joe isn't a dick.
Sorry, Sam? There was a point I was actually going to make about Machine Gun earlier on, but we got sidetracked, is they try really hard to show him as being conflicted. That's why he's cutting the number of his kills into his face. Is that he's not happy about where he is either, but he wants to get out. And they try to establish that, and they do that reasonably well. But
I thought they did it poorly, because I just thought he was Victor Zsasz counter-racking up the points on his face.
Well, the first time I watched it, that's the way I felt. But I got that subtext this time. So, yeah, it wasn't particularly well handled, but I did get the subtext this time. And that's why his transition over to helping Frankenstein felt more believable this time. Because they show him cutting his face that one time, and you see that there's a pain there, that like an actual pain there.
I wasn't sure if that was supposed to be his kills or his navigators.
That was supposed to be his kills.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I assumed it was his kills, but then I thought about it, and I'm like, where does he put the navigators?
What I also noticed is, when you think about it, you talk about the motivation of like framing him and or keeping him in jail. It's weird, but you see it done in The Shawshank Redemption. Very well done. And it's sort of Andy Dufresne is sort of like Jensen Ames in a way, in that you have a corrupt system that wants to keep them inside. And the person who really did the crime is also incarcerated, but never pays for it, really.
Which is a good point. I mean, in this one, at least the guy who was responsible for it does get his comeuppance quite violently, right?
But not like with the justice system failed to do anything about that.
And that actually brings up my other question about the movie. Is there's Ames is responsible for deaths through the race, but that one kill, it's a deliberate murder, right? He gets out of his car and he goes and breaks this guy's neck. Did that seem out of character to you? No matter how, I mean, given his anger and everything like that, does that seem like it would have been out of his character? Because I did find it quite jarring.
Well, given what the guy had done was responsible for, it does. It takes away from the heroic aspect of the character, and might have made more sense if he was taken out in the course of the race by clever driving, rather than it was a very cold and calculated murder where he clearly didn't give a shit about the race, and nor did he. His revenge motivation was far greater than finishing the race, and it does feel a little out of character.
I think it was a ham-handed attempt to show us how like jail had changed him and how people become monsters in jail.
Or he was trying to send a message to the warden, I guess, but it still felt like something that he wouldn't do. I think he would have used the vehicle to use driving, like you said, clever driving to bring about his demise without physically committing murder. It changed right there. It went from being part of the race to becoming murder.
Yeah, part of the race, like Jay was saying, is definitely more believable for the character.
Yeah, because I wanted him to get his comeuppance, but it didn't feel quite right to me.
It would also make it so that Frankenstein is also cleverer, because to do it under the guise of the race, get his revenge, but still be on point of his like quote-unquote mission, it would make him seem smarter.
Agreed.
You know, one thing I really liked about the movie, the remake, actually, was, so on one hand, the soundtrack, terrible. The score, I really liked a lot. And the guy who did the score was a former band member of Tangerine Dream.
Ooh.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of neat, because it was like kind of cool and atmospheric at times, and yeah, it was kind of neat. Maybe it reminded me a little bit of the Fury Road score a little, but like a little more Tangerine Dreamy, so yeah, made perfect sense.
That should be an adjective, more Tangerine Dreamy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I gotta say, like, the actual race aspects were fairly exciting to watch, considering, it didn't have the biggest budget, certainly didn't have a Fury Road budget, but it's still, actually, the race was very engaging while you're watching it, which kind of makes me feel guilty, because I'm like, I could watch a death race. Knowing that this is just actors, I don't think I could actually watch a death race.
Even while we were watching it, after the first phase was done, Amelia was like, who would only pay for the first phase?
Yeah, but what an ingenious model. It's like $99 for the first phase, but that's when most people are going to live. And then the second phase, but you could buy all three phases for $250. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Jesus, like, is there any pay-per-view that costs that much?
Well, and here's the juxtaposition. Remember, his final paycheck was only $300.
Oh, yeah.
But the economy shot, so that's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's 2 weeks worth of pay with 120 hours of labor in a steel factory.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's
it's the hugest thing.
I did miss it the first time I watched it. I know I did. But yeah, to sort of see that comparison, or like $300 versus $250 for 3 days worth of entertainment.
You know, but I think it also is supposed to be indicative of the type of people who can afford to just blow this money on it just to watch.
Oh, and what people are willing to blow their money on.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, because I think you'd have people who were going, well, you know what, I can't really afford it, but I'm going to anyhow, and I'll eat Ichiban for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it's like almost like a commentary on the nature of addiction as well.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah, because, I mean, also in like the late 2000s, there was like just tons and tons and tons of reality shows. Like, there's a lot now, but that was when they were really, really, new and popular-ish. So it's definitely a commentary on, like, reality TV.
Yeah, and this is where we go back to that Verhoeven style that would have worked really well for this, where they could have really amped that up and made it really satirical, right?
Even if you didn't have other world-building shows, but had things where, in the commercials that they make for the pay-per-view, like an interview, like a small little promo, Racer cutting a promo or something, just like, you know, to spice it up a little bit, like make it feel a little bit more like you're in the viewer seat watching this reality show.
Oh, it would have been hilarious to have 14K speaking in his native language and having like really wrong subtitles at the bottom.
Mm-hmm. I keep thinking it would be great to have skip ad at a certain point and have no ads. Buy premium for an extra $50.
Yeah, totally. Like that. Yeah, you totally could have done something like that.
And
that
microtransaction the shit out of it.
Add all this flavor to the movie that I think was, you know, it's like a pretty good broth, but we need a little bit more in there.
I don't know about you, but I'm confused about the rules. Not the rules so much. Yeah, you're killing people, but it. Is the first person across the finish line the winner or the one with the most points and kills? So if you have more kills than the guy who crosses the finish line first, does that guy win? How does that work? Or do they just assume that only one's ever going to make it across?
I think it might be like last man standing rules, but if you cross the finish line, you're done. But before that, it's every man for himself, last man standing.
Right.
Oh, see,
and if more than one finishes, then it comes down to points.
So yeah. You stay on the road until you get used to racking up the points.
Yeah, I went scavenger hunt, means that you have to get as much kind of points as possible before you cross the finish line. And whoever has the most points when they cross the finish line wins.
Hmm. And I think that's why they did away with it in the remake, because it didn't make sense.
Yeah.
It's one or the other, but it can't be both.
Yeah.
So it really can't.
Yeah. Although that was a big aspect is killing the citizenry.
And that's what made it work as satire, was and the population control, because even though it wasn't very well explained, you could still infer it from the way it was presented.
Right.
And there's something to be said for like the wantonness, the randomness of it. Like the fact that anybody and everybody is on the table to be killed. In the remake, that's not true.
Yeah, the only way that they kind of sort of touch base on that is the pit crews. Like Jay said, the running joke about the pit crew that's always in jeopardy is that they're sort of the only ones who are potentially innocent bystanders of
the navigators that are brought in from the women's prison. Well, except for Joe's. His were all male navigators that ran within his little circle, and they're like, no, it's not my turn yet. Nobody wants to go because he's got a reputation of running through navigators.
It's the thing that these are prisoners, so people can completely detach. Like, oh, no, that's sure. It might be a female navigator, but to other people watching,
it's a prisoner.
She's just a prisoner. And her life doesn't mean a lot.
Yeah.
If they could die every time they walked outside, they would give a shit.
Yeah. And this one still maintained the navigator that was trying to sabotage the driving, so to keep Frankenstein in there as well. But of course, you know, you got a smart driver who figures it out and sways her over to his side. All that's actually intact. Now, Paul W.S. Anderson does what we ask of him, and that is to come up with creative ideas and that he's built on the skeleton of the old one while still making it his own. Now, is it as effective? Like, I think the satire that's missing really feels absent when you're watching it. It's still an entertaining movie, but I did not enjoy it as much as the original. Now, it is weird when I look at ratings on these. Now, IMDb's are fairly close with 6.2 for the original out of 10. For Death Race 2000, and 6.4 out of 10 for Death Race from 2008.
Really?
Yeah, so they're very close. Now, Rotten Tomatoes is a different matter. Want to take a guess what the critics thought of the original film?
Oh, 21%. I can see critics hating it, even though it was satire.
18.
Okay.
I'm going to say 31.
Okay. A whopping 83%.
Wow.
On Rotten Tomatoes.
They got the satire.
That was a little baffling. I would have guessed the same way you guys did. Like, oh, wow, that's a bit of a shock. And audience score is pretty close to the IMDb ratings of 64%. Now, the remake, want to take a stab at what the critics thought of this one?
21%.
You just hung up on that one.
Then I'll go 18 again.
Okay.
You know, actually, I'm going to say for this one, I'm going to say it's like 45.
Oh, you're awfully close. Sam would have hit it if he had doubled his. It is 42% critic score. With an audience score, again, floating similarly to IMDb of 60%. So as far as audiences go, they treat them fairly close, but audiences liked the original one better, and so did the critics.
I have a question, though. For the original, when we're talking Rotten Tomatoes, are they taking the critic score from people reviewing it, like, kind of now, after 2000?
I do believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so Rotten, you, people...
Modern reviews.
Modern reviews of it, yeah. I could see it being 83%, to be
yeah.
honest.
Yeah, and I think nostalgia really sways that. Like, I think that's high. Yeah. That's really
it
high.
It is high.
Now, the original one, like, Roger Corman never lost a penny, as we know, was only budgeted at $300,000, and it went on, I mean, just home video alone would have been in the millions, so really wound up being a fairly profitable film, probably despite all the cars they went through and had to rebuild over and over again. Granted, they probably weren't driving them very fast. It was clearly they were just under cranking the camera.
So they were towing them half the time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was that Mary Voronoff didn't even know how to drive.
Nope.
So when you do see her driving your car, it was somebody else.
Apparently, he did any of the driving on the streets where they didn't have permits. Roger Corman did the driving.
That's true, yeah. The remake had a budget of $45 million. They had somewhere around 30 to 50 cars that they wound up rebuilding every time they bashed one up. So, yeah, that's still fairly low considering how many vehicles were in this movie and probably how much mechanical work was going into these. And, yeah, the cars were cool. They were very cool. I had an opening weekend of $12.5 million domestically. Not a great opening weekend for it, and domestic gross was still under its budget at $36.3 million, but it did get a worldwide gross of $76 million, and I imagine had a fairly decent home video rental model for it as well, or at least DVD purchase or whatever, to motivate three more sequels.
Well, when you talk about how you usually talk about this, where it's like double the budget minimum, I don't know if the home video sales are putting it into the doubling territory.
Yeah,
so
I'm not sure.
Honestly,
like,
I don't think it made it. It just warranted three sequels because they wanted them.
I think it is because they had the Roger Corman one as a model. Like, okay, audiences did kind of dig it, but not enough, and we can certainly make these cheaper with a cheaper cast. And maybe that's why they went to that model. It's like, okay, if we scale it back, maybe these will still be profitable. And clearly they must have been.
And all that to say, too, we don't know what the numbers are in terms of how the first Death Race did on DVD in terms of rentals and stuff.
Yeah, but if it doesn't make 90, it doesn't make its budget.
No. I mean, yeah, as far as advertising goes, it's usually triple with the bigger ones. But there must have been enough where they were able to go, hey, yeah, there's still money to be made here. They must have had fairly robust rentals. And sometimes people make that choice, right, where they don't go to the theater to see it, and they'll wait for the DVD or the rental. And this might have been one of those movies.
Sometimes I think it's just because they want to do them. I honestly think there's some ones where they don't make money, but again, they think we can make a cheaper version of this, and it'll be fine. We just need to fill our coffers with something.
Yeah, well, I mean, something cheap and crappy. Paul Anderson had the rights to it, and he chose to utilize it. So,
he's probably the reason.
Yeah, he was producer on all of them. So,
and you know, like there's all those Universal Soldiers, you know, multiple sequels on DVD, like all of those like later release Dolph Lundgren. They're all the exact same thing to those Death Race movies, where there's actually a larger market than you'd think for home video. So I wouldn't be surprised if they perform very well for being a pretty decent, like I was saying to Amelia, I kind of want to watch them because I have a suspicion that this whole time, like they've been coming out and it's just low key fun. Like, you know, it's not super big and flashy, but it's a fun car movie.
Yeah, it would have been on the onset of streaming, so just before the really early days of streaming. So DVD rentals and sales were probably a lot higher than they are now. And these days, the VOD model can be quite profitable, too, especially with the lockdown. We're seeing VOD being really profitable for movies and sometimes can save them. So that could be a possibility, too. We rarely see those numbers outside of box office. So
Because, like, clearly it didn't get a sequel in a theater.
No, no, no. I mean, obviously it wasn't enough to attract Jason Statham back. But you actually start looking through those sequels and, like, oh, they still have stars in these movies.
Mm-hmm.
So
just cheaper stars.
Yes. Yes, definitely cheaper stars. But, you know, it was good B-movie fare before, and apparently it still is.
On the whole, I would say that both of these movies, yeah, they're almost on par, but the first one is... has that little something that the remake is lacking, and that was just like that the parody and satire of American culture at the time.
Yeah,
agreed.
But and it certainly impacted culture in a big way, because Death Race was always this infamous movie, even when I was a kid, and it inspired a lot of video games along the way, and in the end wound up taking its inspiration from the games it inspired. So
yes.
In the remake, so everything comes full circle. As it cannibalizes itself.
What I remember is like knowing about Death Race 2000 and then like driving around, and when somebody's speeding, you're like, what do you think this is? Death Race 2000? Not knowing what we were referencing.
No, I would have been probably a teenager by the time I actually saw the movie, but I was aware it was a David Carradine movie. I was aware Sylvester Stallone was in it. I was aware it was a violent car movie. That was about it.
Yeah.
Well, yep, yeah, because the first time I heard about it was before it even came out on before video was even available.
Yeah, like, when you think Roger Corman movies, it's the first thing you think of. And he didn't really have much to do with it. He was a producer. Oh, well, actually, he did wind up doing the original screenplay, but I guess it was too dark, and he went back to the original author to lighten it up, the other screenwriters to lighten up his original treatment. So
maybe that's what Paul W.S. Anderson needed.
Yeah, I feel like Verhoeven would have been the perfect guy. He would have got it. Mm-hmm. It's a shame. Granted, I doubt Verhoeven's would have been able to be brought in at $45 million. I have a feeling his would have been a significantly more money.
Yeah, but it might also have made more money as well.
Yeah, it might have. Yeah, I won't be surprised if they take another kick at the cat. You know, they see how Mad Max Fury Road did. So if they threw some money at it with that kind of action, could still be something.
Oh, quite easily, yeah. Like I said, and bring that social commentary and parody back into it.
Absolutely. So anybody got any last thoughts about Death Race?
No.
I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. I remember when it came out, I kind of really avoided it because... Let's see. Yeah, it just looks like one of those movies that were of a type where I was like, I'm not into those. But I'm glad that I did check it out for the podcast. And it was a lot more fun than I was anticipating, despite being a pretty bleak movie.
I always enjoy Jason Statham, no matter how bad his movies are. I tend to watch them even knowing that it's probably not going to be that great of a film. And every once in a while, I am pleasantly surprised. And this one was right in the middle of the road for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this felt like a lot of his middle-of-the-road Statham movies, and I'm always entertained by those. And Trish, your last thoughts?
Like, I'll just watch a lot of Statham. That's, I can have a Statham marathon. When you talk about
it, shirtless,
like, he's
Statham,
sort of an everyman, but no, like, he's, I don't know, there's something about him I find incredibly, like, intriguing.
Well, when you have Tyrese Gibson calling him like a hobgoblin, I'm like, wow.
You are so wrong, Tyrese.
Aren't you supposed to be gay? Isn't that what your character was? That's what everybody kept saying your character was. Shouldn't you have been attracted to him?
Maybe he's just not his type. I don't know.
They kept saying that Machine Gun Joe was gay, but at no point did he exhibit the fact that he was. So,
well,
I'm guessing that maybe he wasn't, and that was just a prison rumor.
Oh, I think it was one of those
character myths.
Yeah,
I think I think he was gay. He just doesn't fit into the mold in the slot. Not like how.
No, I don't mean like stereotypes or whatever, but we don't see that as an actual trait, and like he doesn't have a prison girlfriend or whatever.
Well, maybe he just doesn't. He hasn't found the right guy, and he's not into PDA. I think those could be two things.
And everyone sure is a dick about it.
Yeah.
But I want to say what I still loved about the first movie is the car designs are so silly, and I love them.
Yeah, well, you had
like wacky races, but with blood.
I kept thinking that too. It was a bloody wacky racers because you got the alligator car, and then you had the one that looked like a bull, and a lion.
I think can we talk about the SS car?
The SS car?
Yeah. That's the thing we forgot to touch base on was the overt Nazi car.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fans, yeah, that was ugly, but that was one of those jokes you could get away with in the 70s.
It really was, yeah.
That was more a comment on, like, where society was at the point of the death race than anything.
Yeah.
Exactly it. It was sort of a commentary on how this is, to a certain extent, a fascist society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God forbid people... it's just like, it's interesting because maybe in the 70s watching that, it's like, man, I can't imagine a world in which Nazis are just not viewed as just so evil by everybody and by society. Like, this is public Nazi and everyone loves them. And, like, you know, here we are.
Well, if they would have done
long enough.
if they would have shown it in a way where, okay, you see that stand with the fans that are all in the Nazi gear, and then one of the other drivers takes it out. Like, that would have been a whole other thing, but they don't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there was a missed opportunity there, for sure.
Yeah. Not to say that you should go kill out Nazis, but you should in film.
Yeah.
You can punch Nazis
but
for real.
But I mean,
real,
in life.
Yes.
in life, maybe slap a few. Just go crazy about that.
Yeah, because that murder will get you put in jail. Then you're going to be in a death race.
That was my other quick note was at the very end of Death Race 2000. You know, they end the race, right? As President Frankenstein, the race is over.
Mm-hmm.
But in making it make sense as a sequel, and I was like, oh, it's just like the 13th Amendment. The race is abolished, but just not in prisons.
Yes, and because that's that really works.
Yeah.
You assassinate the president, Mr. President. By doing so, you become president.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is this world? And he kills and runs over a reporter.
Well, I don't know. That world is kind of like military coups. That world is maybe like ancient Europe with like kings and queens and kingdoms.
Yeah.
Well, and also he's like a huge celebrity, so
yeah,
like nobody would debate him on it.
It was killing people as a career, so and he'll just pardon himself.
Yeah, maybe that's why he ended up in prison. There, the people overthrew him because they were like, wait a second, this guy can't be president.
stop pardoning yourself.
And he was almost free, but then he blew up in 2012.
Every celebrity becomes president. How could that possibly happen?
I will rule again.
Well, modern comedy aside.
Sorry, I had one more thing. I love me a very cruel, evil Joan Allen. I want more evil Joan Allen on screen. I think that would be very fun.
She was very good. She was very, very good. So, audience, what other race movies would you like us to cover? Do you have one? Are there? I don't know. Let us know at Invasion the Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion the Remake at gmail.com. And follow us on Instagram as well. We got Jeff doing some images up there now, so we're getting a little more active on Instagram.
Yes. Yes. absolutely. Try to definitely be a lot more, as things are, you know, lightening up, not just, you know, COVID-wise, but yeah, there's a lot, you know, lots of crazy stuff, but. You know, I think it's getting more okay to post more and more on social media again.
Yes. You can only catch assholes on social media. You can't catch COVID by following us on social media. So make sure you send your suggestions, your corrections, your comments over to any of those places, including our email, invasiontheremake@gmail.com. We do have a couple of fan challenges coming up, and we're happy to see these coming. So keep them coming. If we like your suggestions and they are accessible, you've told us where to find these movies, we may consider them for a future episode. So keep them coming. We love seeing this, and we like to bring the episodes that you want to see. So mm-hmm. we're gonna try to fire off a couple more over the next month or two, and while mixing in our regular comparisons as well. And of course, tell your friends and family about the show. You can find us in a ton of different places: iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, even freaking YouTube, and so many more. We have a central hub now. We've got, of course, our Libsyn site, invasiontheremake.libsyn.com. But there's also another central hub, our Wix site. Sam, what is the address to that site?
It is invasiontheremake.com. www.wixsite.com/podcast.
And we are hard at work in getting some merch up finally. It's only been almost 5 years, and we're finally getting some merch up for it. Where do we have that? TeePublic?
It is TeePublic, yeah. We'll have the address for you. I don't know it off the top of my head, but we will have the address.
We will get that for you, but we're still developing stuff for it. We've just created the storefront, so now we're getting some product in there. So hopefully we'll have some more details for you next week. Watch our social media for links if we get stuff up before then.
Yeah, and we'll definitely link to it from our site as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So make sure you follow us on our social media for all the latest updates on the new merch. I'm very excited about the merch. All right. Well, I think that's it for Death Race. We're off to the finish line. We're going to go have some beers. Hopefully nobody drives through the bar. I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I always return as Jeff Omega.
And we are out of here.
As to this matter of violence, the technique of violence was first developed in 2 million B.C. by the Australopithecines, a tribe of four-foot primates who had no brains to speak of, but who, nevertheless, invented the tomahawk and used it on each other. This practice led to the enlargement of the brain, another useful weapon. Yes, murder was invented even before man began to think. Now, of course, man has become known as the thinking animal.